Thanks, Dan. Let me answer the first part of that question, which is, will the public know? In the context of full reliance, the decision to place full reliance on a non-U.S. regulator will be made known to the public in two ways. One is through the public inspection reports for the individual firms. It will reflect that the PCAOB has placed reliance on the other regulator when there's full reliance. The other way the public will know is through the bilateral agreements that we have with, that we'll be making with other regulators, as I anticipate that those will be made public once they're concluded. In terms of appealing a decision or so forth, we have not changed the approach in that regard that the board adopted back in 2004. And this is because a decision about how much reliance to place on a non-U.S. regulator is really a decision by the board with regard to the design and implementation of an inspection program. And at that time, the board felt that that was a decision that was properly within its discretion and did not make a process for appeal. And so the proposal that we're recommending today does not change in that respect.
Okay, well, I certainly understand what you're saying, and I remember the decisions we made in 2004. I guess I would just say I would expect that this is something we're likely to hear about in the comments again, and perhaps something on that basis that we'll have to give further consideration to. Let me ask you about a different point. As I read the policy statement, it seems to envision a process of understanding the work of the foreign inspection body, perhaps, or more than perhaps, participating in joint inspections with it, but all leading up to a decision as to whether or not to place full reliance. What happens after that decision? In other words, you know, things can change in any regulatory system. Is it contemplated that the board would revisit these full reliance decisions from time to time to determine whether it continues to be warranted or whether the foreign oversight system is in fact operating in the way that we contemplated when we made the decision?
It is contemplated that the board would revisit it. Under Rule 4012, which is where the board would be making this decision, the board is required to decide upon reliance each year that a firm from that country is scheduled for an inspection that is intended to satisfy the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. So every year that a firm, so if we make a decision on country A in year one, five firms are inspected in year one, and then in year two, there are three more scheduled. That decision that the board made in year one will be revisited in year two.
Okay, so these would be annually renewed determinations, then, not simply one-time events.
Yeah, practically speaking, it probably will be on an annual basis. I mean, for some countries who have very few firms registered with the PCAOB, those firms might be inspected all in one year and might not come back up for inspection again for another 2 years, so the board wouldn't revisit the decision until the firms are again scheduled for inspection for the purposes of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. But for most countries, I think it will be done on an annual basis.
Okay, that kind of leads to another question that I wanted to ask. We're talking about Rule 4012, which sets out the framework for reliance. The rule before it, Rule 4011, relates to the firms in the foreign jurisdiction. And as I read that rule, it envisions that this reliance process or determination would be triggered by firms in a foreign country that are going to be inspected requesting that the board rely on the work of their home country oversight body. The policy statement doesn't really seem to be written that way. It seems to involve more of a determination that we would make in conjunction with a foreign regulator. How does Rule 4011 fit into this picture? Or maybe to ask it more directly, does Rule 4011 serve any purpose? And I take it that if a foreign firm said, please don't rely on my home country regulator, we probably ignore that request.
Well, Rule 4011 is a part of the package. Under the language of Rule 4012, as you mentioned, there must be a request from the firm under Rule 4011. So it is still effective and it is still required. Now, you're right, when the board adopted that rule, the board explained in the section-by-section analysis that Rule 4011 doesn't present a limitation on the board, so that if a firm chose not to submit a statement under Rule 4011, that would not prevent the board from moving forward with a non-U.S. regulator. You know, the purpose of Rule 4011 is really in a supervisory context. At the time, the board felt that, you know, for that to be effective, you need the cooperation of everyone involved, and so we wanted the firms to signal up front whether or not this was something they desired.
I hear what you're saying. I guess it does seem to me that Rule 4011 is a bit of a fiction. And in other words, we're going to, if no firm in a particular jurisdiction makes a request, it's quite likely, it seems to me, that we would still go through the Rule 4012 analysis and not simply ignore Rule 4012 and try and go in and conduct the inspections.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think as a practical matter, what we would do is we would be in dialogue with the home country regulator, and the home country regulator would contact those firms to find out why they're not submitting their Rule 4011s and what concerns that they have. You know, I can tell you that so far we have not met a firm that has objected to submitting a Rule 4011 statement.
Okay, let me ask about something else. As I understand the situation today, there are countries in which we're conducting inspections currently pretty much on our own, not necessarily in conjunction with the home country oversight body, although with its knowledge, and maybe you could say with its permission. There are other cases where we go in with the home country oversight body, but we, while we're there at the same time as they are, we're pretty much inspecting independently. And those things are occurring not because of lack of confidence in the oversight body in that country. It's just the arrangement that we have. Do we contemplate that that'll end? And in other words, if a regulatory system meets the criteria for full reliance, does that mean there necessarily will be full reliance, or would there still be situations where we would inspect independently?
Well, you're right. There are several countries, where we are conducting PCOB-only inspections after having consulted with the local government. And so this is because those countries do not currently have an audit oversight entity that conducts regular inspections of audit firms. So there's no opportunity there to do a joint inspection. In terms of the other countries where we are working with an audit oversight body that conducts inspections, I wouldn't say that we are there at the same time, but really conducting our own inspection independently. And in all of those inspections, the work really is divided between the two regulators, and we are relying already to a certain extent on the work of the other regulator. So it truly is a joint inspection. I would expect that for those countries where we have been able to conduct joint inspections already, that those countries will be considered for full reliance.
Okay, well, let me just touch on one last topic, and then I'll surrender the floor or surrender the phone, I guess. the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, of course, envisions that firms can appeal their inspection reports if they don't agree with the findings that the board has made. The Act also envisions that the non-public part of the report would remain non-public for 12 months, and then either be released or not released, depending upon whether the board believes that the firm has satisfactorily remediated any quality control deficiencies that are addressed in the non-public part of the report. And that determination, too, is appealable to the SEC. Now, as I understand the framework we're looking at here in full reliance, the board will issue a report, but that report may simply reference or incorporate the findings of the foreign oversight body. So in that context, how's the appeal process going to work? I mean, particularly if the SEC asks us to justify our findings, since we won't have done the work and presumably won't have the underlying evidence, how would we defend an appeal?
Dan, let me take a shot at that. The premise of your question is correct. As you noted, Sarbanes-Oxley does provide a firm with the right to appeal. So certain aspects of a PCOB inspection report under certain circumstances, as well as an adverse remediation determination. And that right is available to all registered firms, whether in the U.S. or outside the U.S., with respect to any PCOB inspection report. Our expectation is that the board will, in all cases under a full reliance approach, have sufficient basis for, have confidence in, any assertion in the inspection report, as well as any remediation determination before that's made. In the full reliance context, this would involve, first of all, the board assessment as to the independence and rigor of the oversight system, the opportunities the board's inspectors have had to observe portions of the inspection, and where appropriate, inspector review of portions of the audit firm's work papers. Having said all that, what would be necessary ultimately to successfully defend an appeal to the SEC in the full reliance context remains to be seen. Certainly, as you suggested, the PCOB would need to be in a position to do that. The details of the standard review, however, are up to the SEC to decide, and it may be that that is not determined until there is a concrete factual situation, and the SEC makes that determination in the context of that proceeding.
It also seems to me there's sort of an odd feature here, and you can comment on it if you think I'm right or wrong, but while an SEC decision and appeal would certainly bind us, I assume it wouldn't have any effect on the foreign regulator. In other words, if the foreign regulator has found that there's a particular deficiency in the firm's quality controls, and we put that in our report, and the SEC rejects that determination, then it's not in our report anymore, but the foreign regulator is still perfectly free to make that determination and enforce it however they think appropriate.
Well, I think that's right. The right to appeal we've been talking about applies to the PCOB inspection report, and obviously in these situations, the non-U.S. regulator would be acting pursuant to its own authority and would have its own process. So in the example you described, assuming the non-U.S. regulator had its own process for making portions of the inspection report public after an adverse remediation determination, they would be free to do so, wouldn't be bound by a PCOB determination or subject to this SEC appeal process.
Okay, well, that's all I wanted to ask. Thank you very much for the time and the answers.
Thank you, Dan, and you sound strong and perceptive, so you must be, the rest must be doing you good.
Okay, I hope so.
Okay, Charlie.
Thank you. Let me begin by saying that I strongly support our policy of working with home country regulators. To me, this is largely a matter of common sense. We benefit immensely from the knowledge of home country regulators regarding local laws, culture, and practices. Working side by side with local regulators, PCOB inspectors can better appreciate how those local laws and customs affect audits within our oversight authority. And we also gain insight into the broader environment in which auditors operate, which we might not otherwise see given our limited look solely at a firm's audits of U.S. public companies. But not all regulators are alike. Various factors can affect their effectiveness, as well as their ability to be useful in PCOB inspections. Because of these differences, I have also supported our policy of evaluating the extent to which we should use the work of another regulator based on a sliding scale. This approach respects the prerogative of local jurisdictions to make their own choices about the intensity and the form of enforcement of accounting and auditing regulations. At the same time, by supplementing the work of the local regulator with our own work, we are able to overall to provide investors in U.S. securities consistent protection, as they're entitled to under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. And after more than 2 years of experience, I think this approach is working very well. I also would like to commend the untiring work of Rhonda Snare and our small but quite formidable Office of International Affairs in forging appropriate relationships with regulators in other countries and helping us judge how best to work with different regulators given their various approaches. Recently, Call Calendar of our inspections divisions has also joined in that effort, and I want to recognize and thank everyone. Thank you for all that you've done there. As the proposal before us reflects, it is tempting to go further. That is, to envision a seamless system of mutual reliance under which each country polices the practices of auditing within its borders in a manner and with sufficient intensity that protects investors and securities issued or traded in other countries, as if the audit were conducted and policed in the jurisdiction where the investors reside. Actually, moving to such a full reliance approach requires that we base decisions on facts, not hopes or illusion, though. And on the facts as we know them, I think this proposal goes too far. The fact is that few, if any, countries spend as much on or devote as much intensity of effort to enforcement of financial reporting and auditing as the U.S. does. There is no doubt that our inspections have indeed been helped by assistance from other regulators. That assistance should not go unacknowledged. But the fact is that based on our experience to date, there are important differences between our inspections and those of other regulators, such that even the most robust of those other regulators have faced scope limitations and other challenges that we would not countenance. When we use a sliding scale to calibrate our use of the work of other regulators, we can manage our inspections to make up for such differences. By attempting to define conditions for full reliance, the proposal risks interfering with that flexibility intended in Rule 4012. Thereby potentially undermining the underlying principle of basing our judgments about reliance on a sliding scale that depends quite naturally on facts and circumstances. Ironically, the conditions set forth in the policy statement also necessarily establish a model for regulation that squeezes out different policy choices, although I know that's not our intent. Moreover, I'm not comfortable with all the criteria set forth in the policy statement's model for when a home country's regulator should qualify for full reliance. For example, I am concerned that the proposed policy statement would in fact lower the bar for the highest reliance we would afford. That is, independence from the profession remains one of the stated principles underlying our policy. The proposed statement would permit full reliance even if only a majority of the governing body of the non-U.S. oversight entity were independent from the auditing profession. That is not independence. Rather, it would be a dangerous step backward, inconsistent with our failed experience in the U.S. with self-governance of the profession. Although self-governance may feel comfortable for some, history has shown that, in fact, it is not good, not just for the investors whom we are charged to protect, but also not good for the profession itself. Finally, PCAOB inspections are intended to inspect for compliance with U.S. standards and rules, including many important reforms unique to U.S. securities, such as an internal control audit and tough independence rules. It's not realistic to think that non-U.S. authorities will have the ability or the inclination to enforce such U.S. requirements. The proposal is also silent on these requirements, leaving one to wonder how or whether they would be enforced. Make no mistake, the point is not whether we should be doing inspections by ourselves. I continue to support our work with other regulators. I think our current approach remains appropriate in light of the circumstances I've described. I'm also encouraged by our interaction with other audit regulators in other countries. However, I do not think the new proposed approach is justified or appropriate, and therefore I do not support moving forward with it. Thank you.
Kayla.
Thank you. In its broadest terms, this proposed policy statement would interpret two components of Rule 4010. First, the statement would clarify how a decision to fully rely on a home country system of inspecting audit firm quality and performance would be implemented. Who would actually conduct the field work, and how will inspection findings be reached? What would full reliance look like? Second, it would describe in significant detail what criteria would guide the board in evaluating a home country's audit oversight regime under the five principles articulated in Rule 4012 for the purpose of determining the degree of reliance to be placed on that other regulator. Formalizing these interpretations is important, and it is good. It will not only help coordinate our discussions and negotiations with our counterparts abroad, but it will also provide the investing public as well as audit clients with a better understanding of how inspections of non-U.S. but PCAOB-registered audit firms will be carried out. But the content of this particular proposal is not without controversy. This is why I'm pleased that we're asking for a public comment and why we are in recognition of the many activities simultaneously occurring with respect to our anticipated commentators, why we are providing an unusually long, that is a 90-day comment period. As we evaluate this proposed policy statement, I think it's important to keep in mind several facts. The first, as the chairman noted, 842 of our 1,825, which or 46% of our registered firms reside outside the U.S., and roughly half of these are currently subject to mandatory PCAOB inspections. Fact two, it is impossible for logistical as well as legal reasons for the board to completely fulfill this inspection responsibility with regard to non-U.S. firms unless we find a way to work with and leverage the resources of home country audit regulators. Let me repeat, it is impossible to meet our mandate if we think we have to do this all by ourselves. Third, developing relationships with audit regulators provides the opportunity to continue to advance those core principles that drive audit oversight globally. Put another way, working with other regulators allows us to be part of a global rising tide, lifting all audit ships. Fact four, the establishment and advancement of these core principles does not require that every regulator look and act exactly like us. Investors do not need, nor do they want, foreign regulators to be cookie cutters of the PCAOB. These, I believe, are facts. Now let me describe the two beliefs that have been chiefly influencing my approach to these issues. First, with respect to what full reliance should look like. I think it is disingenuous for the PCAOB to suggest that it will, under appropriate circumstances, quote-unquote, rely on another regulator when what we really mean is that we will continue to perform all of the important work and control all of the important activities. That's not reliance, that's dictatorship. Therefore, I believe that if another regulator meets the essential criteria of our core principles, which includes an important criteria of willingness to either publicly report its findings or allow the PCAOB to report its findings, and that other regulator demonstrates after a period of observation that it is willing and able to inspect audit firms for compliance with the standards and rules applicable to auditors of U.S. traded companies, then I think there is nothing wrong with relying on the personnel, activities, and conclusions of that other regulator. As good as we think our personnel are, they do not have magic wands. I understand that others may feel differently, and I look forward to their comments. My second belief, with respect to what the policy statement describes as the essential criteria of the five core principles. As others have discussed before me and identified, the criteria that describes independence is potentially the most problematic. Specifically, this proposal will allow the PCAOB to place full reliance on a regulator whose governing body includes people who are actually practicing auditors or accountants, as long as they constitute a minority of that body and satisfy the other important principles of 4012 in this policy statement. Clearly, this is not what Congress decided was best for the PCAOB, and I expect many commentators will struggle with this. Candidly, I'm not yet comfortable with this approach, and if this were a final proposal, I'm not sure that I would support it. Even though, as I stated earlier, I think it would be inappropriate for us to expect every market to duplicate precisely the PCAOB governance structure. This is why I think public comment will be so useful. As commentators look at this, we must be mindful that no particular governance structure is necessarily the universal protector against all evil. I think if all the Enron F scandals taught us anything, it's that governance structure alone is not enough. Put in the context of audit oversight, for example, in reality, is there really a difference in mindset between a person who is currently working for an audit firm and one who has just left such a firm, expecting to return to that firm as soon as he or she leaves the regulatory body? Does requiring a majority of lay governors result in an inappropriate reliance on the professional full-time staff hired by the governing body? These are all important questions, and quite candidly, I don't know what the answers are, but I hope commentators weigh them as they look at this proposal. I'd like to join with others in thanking the staff for their hard work on this project, and I do sincerely look forward to a robust public comment. I urge all interested parties, particularly international investors in the U.S. markets, to take advantage of this 90-day comment period to analyze its proposal and, if appropriate, suggest alternative approaches. I note that the board has never adopted a final standard or rule that has not been influenced by the results of the comment period, and I'm certain that will be the case with this proposal as well. I have one question which I think would go to Gordon, and that is, why are we issuing this as a proposed policy statement and not simply an amendment to Rule 4012?
Well, you're correct. This is structured as a board policy statement, and the board has issued one previous policy statement, the one it issued on AS2 back in May 2005. This is not a rule because it doesn't impose any new obligations on registered firms or their associated persons, and the Act or SEC rules don't otherwise require it to be a rule, as they do for certain things, as you know, such as our bylaws and ethics code. The staff, though, thought this was more appropriately structured as a board policy statement rather than staff guidance, because it is more a statement of how the board intends to implement its existing rule, Rule 4012, in light of policy considerations, rather than a very technical interpretation of an existing rule, the type of thing we've typically done through staff guidance.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Just in conclusion, even though, as I stated, I have some concerns about some of the elements of this proposal, I do support releasing it for public comment. As Dan said, it's appropriate now to invite the public to engage in our debate. And again, thank you to the staff for bringing this to us.
Bill Gradison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also want to join with my colleagues in thanking the staff for an outstanding piece of work, and I support this proposal. I want to reflect a little bit, though, not so much with a question, but with some thoughts on the relationship of what we're talking about doing here to two other things which are closely related. The first, and the chairman used this word, reciprocity, and our second has to do with auditing standards. With regard to reciprocity, I presume that the concept that is that we would be willing to be judged as to the degree that a foreign counterpart would be willing to rely upon us to perform inspections in the United States when the circumstances were reversed, that perhaps goes without saying. Now, when we look at our proposal, we have a single framework, but we could be judged by 25 or 30 or more different frameworks. We cannot necessarily assume that our foreign counterparts would use the same framework that we are proposing to use with them. Moreover, the framework that we've developed is one that we know we would meet, or we wouldn't be proposing it. It would be kind of two-faced if we did. But the implication of that is that we could face a situation where a foreign counterpart suggested a means of judging whether to rely upon us using the criteria that they used to develop their own framework, which might be quite different from our own. And let me take the sensitive issue, which has to do with the involvement on the board, on the governing board of people who are active in the profession. Some of them may take the position, take this as a straw man, if you will, but some of them may take the position that that's a good idea to have some folks in the governing body that are really out there doing audits and are current on this, and therefore might say to us in judging in terms of reciprocity, well, does that PCOB have the current knowledge on its board that would come from having some people that are out there in the trenches doing audits right now? Of course, we would not qualify. So I just want to make the point that when we talk about this, we've got to be open to the possibility of being judged by a different set of criteria than we are being used in the judgment of others. I really have three points. My second point is that I would not want the public or our foreign counterparts to assume by the use of the term of full reliance that we're necessarily going to reach that point very often. I don't know. I don't want to prejudge it, but I just would not want people to look at that or even use of that term to suggest, well, that, you know, that's where we want everybody to be, because I'm not sure it's necessarily realistic to think that it might happen. If it does, that would be, to use a Shakespearean phrase, a consummation devoutly to be wished. But I think it's setting a very high bar, and I wouldn't want to be misunderstood in saying, well, you know, we expect you all to get there. Everybody's going to be above average, to use a Lake Wobegon analogy. Finally, I want to talk about this matter in terms of what are we asking them to inspect against? presumably we're asking them to inspect against PCAOB auditing standards. Well, none of them, to my knowledge, use PCAOB auditing standards in terms of their own oversight of their own organizations, if for no other reason that, to my knowledge, none of them has anything comparable to 404B, which means, and I think there are other points that could be made, too. They're using international, I don't say they can't use ours, or they couldn't learn to use ours, but I'm not sure that that's what they're accustomed to using. So I think that the question of is deeper than whether they just meet these criteria, but do they have the skills and knowledge to be able to apply PCAOB standards? Now, taking that question one step further, this is a matter I feel pretty strongly about. I think the very fact that we're undertaking this initiative only makes sense to me if it carries with it a commitment to work with our foreign counterparts in the development of as close to we can get of a single international auditing standard. Now, I recognize that they won't be identical any more than the international financial reporting standards are identical. There are national carve-outs. We have our national carve-out in auditing standards called 404. But I make this point because I just think, as a practical matter, to expect these new counterpart organizations, as they get developed, to be able to know enough, at least for quite some time, to be able to apply not their standards, but ours, to these international auditing standards is asking a lot, maybe asking more than is realistic. Further afield saith not. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill, and thank the board. If there's no further discussion, I will put the question to the board. All those in favor of approving the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
Nay.
The ayes have it, and the motion is carried. If there's no further business, this concludes our agenda today. The meeting is now adjourned. Thank you very much, Rhonda and...